Let us begin our service this morning with the lighting of our five candles of fellowship. We light these candles to remind ourselves and our children of our work to create a world that is fair and caring. We strive to make the spaces we inhabit peace sites dedicated to promoting peace. We affirm the sacredness of sexuality and gender diversity. We honor all sexual orientations and gender identities, as well as people who have none, and deeply value each other's authenticity. We continue on our journey toward undoing prejudice, racism, and oppression. Our journey as individuals, as a community, and as participants in the wider world. We understand disability as a culture, lived history, and embodied experience, and a product of disabling oppressions in society. We work to enable full access and interdependence in our faith community. We are given this one earth and seek to honor this truth by caring for our buildings, our grounds, and all places on this earth in ways that respect the interconnected web of all existence of which we are but a part. In this spirit, we gather, looking toward the day when all people are inside the candle's warmth and light.
Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church at Washington Crossing. I'm Reverend Kim Wildchesky, and it's my privilege to serve this congregation as its minister. I'm so glad to welcome all of you into this time. If this is your first time worshiping with us this morning, a special welcome to you. No matter how we gather, we know that it is a brave thing to enter a community for the first time. I hope you will recognize in this time together that we are a congregation striving to create community, celebrate life, and change the world. I want to take this moment to say again some of what I lifted up early last week. It is no small thing that I am able to be here this morning in our actual sanctuary. Over the last few months, our tech team, members of this congregation, have taken it upon themselves to research, install, test, and run what is basically a TV station in the back of our sanctuary. Just yesterday, six of us, some staff but many lay leaders, spent 3 hours in a Zoom meeting on how to best do multi-platform ministry, in-person and remote worship. We haven't figured it all out yet, not even close, but we are growing in our ability to connect you to this place, and we hope that means you to one another. So welcome, everyone. I will miss looking out at your faces this morning in those little boxes, but I hope to hear from you in the chat or throughout the week in some other fashion. Visitors, I'm sure you've already learned a bit about us just in these few minutes in which we've gathered together. But if you would like to know more after this morning's service, you can just fill out a digital visitor's card at the link provided in the chat so we can learn a bit about you and you can learn more about us. Additionally, if anyone is in need of closed captioning, you can turn it on by clicking on the bottom of your screen, the square with the letters CC inside. Just click there and on the option Show Subtitle. And if you are seeing those and you wish not to, just click that same button and on that square click Hide Subtitle. I want to thank our tech hosts this morning, Heather Edwards, John Harvey, MJ Hansen, and our AV tech staffer, Ariel Schwartz, who are all behind the scenes in different locations, but making our time together today possible. I want to lift up MJ Hansen again, as well as Lori O'Neill, who create the videos and slides that you see each week. Steve Ryan, the Thrive Choir, as well as music from the director of music at our sister congregation, Dorothea Dix, the DeMasi brothers. And then, of course, also to Daniel Lowney, this week's worship associate. As we settle into this time together, I invite you to turn your attention away from your expectations, your assumptions, your hopes, and turn instead to your body, your breathing, the pace of your heart, the comfort or discomfort of how you are seated or standing. could you be even 1% more comfortable, more calm, more centered, more curious? Today would not be the same if you hadn't chosen to be here. Consider this truth, breathe into this truth as we sing together, gathered here. Carol will be placing the words in the chat, and we will listen to Steve's voice as we all sing together from our different locations.
Mystery of the hour, gathered here in one strong body, gathered here in the struggle and the power, Spirit, draw near.
Former Catholic priest Eugene Kennedy wrote, "There would be no need for love if perfection were possible. Love arises from our imperfection, from our being different and always in need of the forgiveness, encouragement, and that missing half of ourselves that we are searching for, as the Greek myth tells us, in order to complete ourselves." Unitarian Universalism teaches us these truths time and again, that we do not need to be perfect to be loved, that our being different is a gift, but also requires sacred work. Each week, we join with hundreds of other Unitarian Universalists in lighting a chalice, symbol of our faith, beacon of hope, and an invitation to embody the lessons offered to us each time we gather. As we light our chalices today, may we be reminded that we are connected to one another and to a larger community of faith and love. Please join me in our chalice lighting words. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another.
When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love. When I breathe in, I'll breathe in peace. When I breathe out, I'll breathe out love.
Good morning, everybody. It's so good to see you. Kim is talking this morning about how we react when something really bad happens to us, when we experience trauma. So when I first heard this week, I thought, nothing bad has ever really happened to me. How am I gonna tell the story today? But guess what? Thinking nothing bad has happened to me, not feeling the depth of an event, is one way I react to trauma. Everything is fine. As many of you know, today I have three young adult sons, but the story of my first son's birth, Roger, was not what I expected. It was not fine. Now, like I said, Roger was my first child, and I had no idea what to expect. And when I get nervous, what do? I over-prepare. So I read books, listen to many stories from my friends about the birth of their babies. I was ready. But no amount of books or stories could have prepared me for the New York City taxi ride to the hospital. I gave birth to Roger in the taxi cab. I won't go into details here, but I will say that by the time we arrived at the hospital, I was weirdly calm, and I thought in control. I remember saying to my husband, "Bill, make sure you give the driver a big tip." And I said, ask him if we may take a photo of him. Bill actually worked as a resident at the hospital. So when Roger and I finally arrived, even before we were in the room, his coworkers stopped by in the emergency room to congratulate us. Roger was not an hour old, and I was at his office. I remember saying in my typical Robin fashion, "Hi, nice to meet you. I've heard so much about you." I was fine, I thought. But you know what? I was actually in shock and didn't know it. One of the things we teach our children and parents is that when someone says, "I'm sorry," you don't have to respond right away. You don't have to say, "That's okay. That's okay." You can say, "Thank you," or something else until you are actually ready to respond. If someone says, "How are you?" you don't have to say, "Fine." You can say, "I'm not doing so great." And if you want, you can add, "You know what would be most helpful to me right now?" and tell them what you need. In my case, I would have said, "Can you come back later? I want to spend a little time figuring out what just happened and being with my new son." We are so used to moving through hard moments quickly. So many of us don't know and aren't taught that it's okay not to be okay, or not okay yet. Looking back, I see how the shock of Roger's birth carried me through those early moments and days. But I wonder how it would have been different if someone had invited me, like we're being invited in worship these weeks, to truly consider what did happen, what could have happened, and the gratitude for how we are right now. I hope we can remember today that whatever trauma or hard event happens to us, we can give thanks to our ability, our resiliency to see us through, for our ability to be and say, "It's okay." And we can. We deserve to also take the time to feel the impact on our hearts, our bodies, and our spirit. So let's pause and honor the resiliency within each of us. I invite you to close your eyes for a moment. Take a couple of deep breaths. If you like, put your hand on your heart. Open your heart and mind to the energy of deep strength, vulnerability, and humanness that is always there within you, inviting it in. The invitation is to thank that part of you. Thank you, everyone. And that's our story for today.
Eric Danielson's prayer language. A buddy asked about the condition of my prayer life. I had no idea what to tell him. So while my mouth hung slightly open, I reviewed my memories of the past 24 hours. I wrote 1,000 words yesterday, hopeful one would find a friend. It's always okay to ask for help, I told my son, pouring concrete between our present and future selves. My head bobbed in time to a song by The National. I even played Boom GDA on my air guitar. Then I flinched when the singer promised not to ruin everything. My eyes traced the contours of a Scott Cairns poem, then closed in worship to read between the lines. I challenged every father's fear of failure to an arm wrestling match, then exclaimed, "Jesus," both an expletive and appeal for strength. I stared at the thumbnail of a Rothko painting and memorized the blue. I scrubbed my bare arms and chest with green soap, baptizing another day's shame and watching it cascade down the drain. Using soft kisses to plot points, I drew a map of my wife's collarbone, then leaned back to examine the legend. Over the course of the day, I sighed something like 32 times. I pray without ceasing, I told my friend, and considered the matter settled. As Unitarian Universalists, we all have our own definitions of prayer. My definition flickers and changes often. One that I have is that prayer is a place where I learn that I don't have to hold everything within myself, because sometimes I feel too small in here, in that place that Robin offered to feel and receive a blessing. Too small in here to hold it all, to hold all my sorrows and the sorrows of the world. So I have to find a place to put them. And like lifting a heavy load, like carrying a burden down the road, having many hands makes light work. Having many hearts leaning towards something together makes lightness too. So I invite you to offer up a prayer in your own way, to type a name, a word, a phrase into the chat that will be lifted up by all of us. We still don't know if the chat works, but what we know is that that technology isn't the way things get lifted up. So let's give it a try, that name, a word, a phrase that you would like lifted lighter by those who you gather in this space with, or maybe you just whisper a word into this space between us. Allow yourself to be carried. Allow the 100 or more hearts here, together, to beat alongside yours, lifting the burdens contained within, holding your name in a web of love and compassion. Holding those in need of healing with a tender, gentle regard. Lending the little strength of each of us until it becomes the great strength of each of us. And not just us here in these squares holding more, holding the space between the test and the results. But holding the healthcare workers on the brink of exhaustion again. And holding family members waiting for the news, waiting to hold the new babies in their empty arms. Those new babies, let us hold them in prayer too. Let their sweetnesses rub off on our hearts like a salve, like a balm. Let their wails and cries in the night be for the heartbreak of all of us. Let us hold all these and more. Those packing a suitcase, escaping a bad situation. Those putting a key in the lock and giving it one more try. Let us lift up the teachers and students who are preparing again to return to some again other odd time, ready to return to pen and paper and laughter and touch. Lift up the store clerks and farmers and attendants and late-night cleaning crews, the incarcerated, the incubated, the intubated, the isolated, the houseless and the hungry, and everyone on that long list of too many. Don't let them fall through the cracks. Not today. Everyone is held right here, right now. Even those who cannot hold onto themselves one moment more. Even you. You are held in prayer, whatever that means for you, and all the names on your lips and all the hopes in your heart and all the broken places that long for repair, let no one and nothing be outside the circle of this love. Let me take a moment to echo some of what was shared today. We hear from some of you that there are new babies amongst us who are wailing for many different needs and reasons. And we lift up the doctors and the parents and the child themselves who is looking for that assistance. If you are finding that you can't chat, just select to me and I can lift it up if you aren't seeing an option to lift up everybody's. We lift up the children among us and those still suffering and those still hopeful. We lift up the sick and the recovering, the anniversaries and the births, the hurting and the traumatized, those who are embarking on new beginnings that may lead to final endings. We lift up those who are not believing in science, who are pushing against the call to protect one another. We lift them up too. I invite you to continue to place into the chat. You can either direct it to me specifically or to everyone. Let those joys and sorrows, the many pieces of our heart, come forward as we sing together, Spirit of Life. We remember that no one, nothing is outside of the circle of this love. So let us fill this space and this time lifting up one another and all that we share. This morning, we continue in our conversation about trauma. The physical and emotional impact that the last year and a half has had and continues to have on all of us. And like last week, we spoke about the necessity of naming what's going on so that we can all start from the same understanding and language, so that we can each come to this congregational community with compassion for ourselves and for others. This morning, I want to talk some on perfection as a trauma response. Now, before I do, I want to share that I heard this great quote that I wish I had had for last week's sermon, but it still feels really ripe for today. The Reverend Bill Sinkford, who was one of our UUA presidents many years ago, said, "The purpose of worship is to prove that we can tell the truth and survive." I heard this past week with an addition from another colleague, the Reverend Dr. Elizabeth Stevens, adding, "Worship is the practice of telling the truth so we can survive together." So again, this is our work together this morning and in all mornings. This is what it means to be faithful to ourselves and to each other. So let me allow us to dive into this with an excerpt of Louise Erdrich's advice to myself. Leave the dishes. Let the celery rot in the bottom drawer of the refrigerator and an earthen scum harden on the kitchen floor. Leave the black crumbs in the bottom of the toaster. Throw the cracked bowl out and don't patch the cup. Don't patch anything. Don't mend. Buy safety pins. Don't even sew on a button. Pink molds will grow within those sealed cartons in the refrigerator. Accept the new forms of life. And talk to the dead who drift in through the screened windows, who collect patiently on the tops of food jars and books. Recycle the mail. Don't read it. Don't read anything except what destroys the insulation between yourself and your experience, or what pulls down, or what strikes at, or what shatters this ruse you call necessity. I spend a lot of my empty minutes, those brief moments between children and checklists, cleaning off the surfaces in my house. It's not so much cleaning, actually, as it is reorienting the stuff on them, repositioning the pile of mail, reorganizing the thank you notes that still haven't been sent, making the napkins, the toothbrush holder, the container where the spatulas live just look a bit nicer, better, more where they ought to be. If anyone in my house notices, that would be complete news to me. And to be honest, it's not for them. For the last year and a half, that obsessive itch that I scratch is all for me. It's all for that full body feeling of calm, of stability, of safety. Yes, safety that floods my body when things appear to be just right. If the surfaces in my external world are clear of mess, so too must be my life. If I can keep things orderly, contained, presented in such a way that I decide, then I am in control. Then I am in charge. And then I am safe. Now, there are only four other folks in this sanctuary, and they're all looking at me like this is a little bit odd, or at least odd to share. And I would guess that for some of you, this sounds really full on, but I'm also guessing that it's resonating for a few who I just can't see at the moment. And maybe it's not the tabletops, right? Maybe it's not the tabletops that you need to clear, but maybe it is your relationship with work or how you fill your schedule. Or the way something always needs to be fixed in the house or pruned outside. Maybe your hypervigilance is always knowing what's happening on Facebook or MSNBC. Those are really tactile examples. How about those of us who need to make every right decision? Anybody feel that resonating? The most calculated decision, the most responsible, the least controversial? It's all the same. One nearly universal response to feeling out of control, to the disorientation of trauma, is trying to find ways to assert control, to become ever more anchored to what we know or know how to do. It's why perfection and all these different expressions is so often wanted for in times like this. No room for failure, no room for mistake, for uncertainty, for lack of control. In this prolonged period of threat, we are scrambling to feel safe. In this time of ongoing ambiguity and uncertainty, we are vying for certainty, solidity, security. Everything must be perfect. Clear the table. Now, if you are one of the few for whom this resonates, I want to be really clear that none of this is inherently bad or wrong. And maybe I should be saying this, if you don't recognize this in yourself, but you're seeing this in your kids or your partner or your friend, your neighbor, your parents, and it's irritating you, none of this is inherently bad or wrong. These are actually legitimate survival strategies, what I've named. But whatever your version of this is, it is important to know that it is a tool that you are using. It is a response to some activation within us, signaling a want to be protected from, or at the very least, a want to get ahead of and get armored against the unknown, the uncontrollable, some threat of a disordered life. We might think of it as a quirk in our personality, but it is the spirit in hiding. A bunny under brush after being chased. The Reverend Elizabeth Stevens, who I mentioned earlier and whose doctoral work is on trauma-informed worship, shared recently, "One response to trauma is to reassert control. And the thing about trauma," she says, "is you're not in control. This isn't something that can be fixed. This is a place to stay, a place to hold. It's a place to be present. It's a place to witness." Should I say that again? It could be great, and it could be awful to hear this again. You guys can let me know. Here's what she says. "One response to trauma is to reassert control, and the thing about trauma is that we are not in control. This isn't something that can be fixed. This is a place to stay. It's a place to hold. It's a place to be present. It's a place to witness." Like last week, I have an invitation for you for the week ahead. Two, in fact. The first, and you can do this one anytime that works for you, in the car, before bed, just some uninterrupted time. I want you to think about someone else's story, about someone in your proximity that you tell a trauma and healing story about. Someone that is almost heroic in the way they dealt with. And I want you to think about that language, dealt with, or the way they managed, fixed, healed from, got over some tragedy, oppression, some shattering of whatever kind. I want you to think about them, their story, and just like last week when we talked about exegesis, that critical or playful interpretation, I want you to take this quiet moment of your choosing and think about their story. Not that story. I want you to think about their story. Who told you this story for the first time, and why did they tell it to you? What lesson were you meant to learn? And then I want you to imagine that survivor, the hero, and ask, how would they tell the story, their story? What words would they use to talk about what happened? What did it feel like in their bodies, on their spirit? Who were they? And how did they change? Now, don't answer for them. This is the spiritual practice part of it. I want you to ask. Even if this person is not present to you because of death or estrangement or because this is too awkward of a conversation, I actually don't want you to engage this conversation with that person. I want you to inquire. I want your spirit to inquire with theirs. This is an invitation to imagine, but it is also an invitation to listen. As Americans, we've got all these trauma stories as part of our makeup: colonization, slavery, land abuse, on it goes. But then we win a war, pass a bill, make an amendment, whatever it is, and then declare it's over, it's done. In fact, we say we've got all of these heroic stories as part of our makeup, and we do the same thing for the people in our families, those we have proximity to. It's cleaner. It's more celebratory. There's no fragility mixed in, at least that isn't conquered. But it's also not true. And so then when we are faced with our very own trauma, we've learned to put those same false pressures on our own souls. Be fine, feel safe, move on, be strong, it's done. But what we know, what we know now, having living through still, this incredible time of chronic, relentless grief, fear, uncertainty, stress, the whole of it, is that we are not, we can't, we haven't, we don't, we aren't. This trauma is living in and on our bodies, and it is not done. We've just learned to make it look perfect. And so my second invitation for you this week is to tell your story differently. Not the story, but your story. When you find yourself moving the napkins from one end of the table to the other, for example, I want you to pause. I want you to breathe. I want you to give notice to where in your body you are feeling your feelings. Place your hand there, as Robin invited us earlier, and maybe even put a word to those feelings if you can. Breathe, sing, cry, maybe pat tenderly that spot. Decide then what to do next. You can move the napkins if you need to. I'm going to move the napkins, but take a beat. Become present. Witness to your need for control, your need for safety, your need to keep surviving. These actions serve a purpose, but you must listen to what they are teaching. So, may you listen. May you listen as they say, uncertainty. May you listen as they cry, exhaustion. May you listen as they write before your eyes, fear. May you listen as they whisper, resiliency. May you listen as they begin to announce resiliency. May you listen as they celebrate you surviving, as they celebrate you. Pink molds will grow within those sealed cartons in the refrigerator. Accept the new forms of life. Can you say it with me? May it be so. And amen.
Hi. I am here. be times when it's hard. There may be times when I need help. And I know all I need is in front of me. I am healing.
The financial affirmation supports one pillar of our vision to change the world. While your pledges support the ongoing work of the church, 50% of the weekly plate collection supports community organizations such as Trenton Children's Chorus, whose mission is to empower the academic, social, and spiritual lives of children through artistry and music. They believe every child's voice has a place in the world and serve Trenton's youth so that they are heard. They strengthen confidence, build character, and broaden horizons through the challenges and opportunities that are integral to music excellence. Together, with academic resources and joyful community, they transform lives through the power of choral singing. To make a donation, you may use the church's website, donate through PayPal, set up e-banking, or send a check through the mail directly to the church. For more information, please visit the UUCWC website. The link is in the chat. Remember to assist our treasurer by noting on your check or the memo line of your PayPal donation that your gift is for the weekly plate. Your generosity and affirmation is greatly appreciated.
Wonders of this life. 3, 4. May the wonders of this life shine on you. May the wonders of this life shine on you. Inspire you and guide your way in everything you do. May the wonders of this life shine on you. May the magic of your dreams set you free. May the magic of your dreams set you free. To sail to far off places and be all you want to be. May the magic of your dreams set you free. Always walk with hope in your heart. May you always walk with hope in your heart. Believe anything is possible in light of the dark. May you always walk with hope in your heart. May the joy of a song fill your soul. May the joy of a song fill your soul. Lift up your voice and sing your truth, whether young or whether old. May the joy of a song fill your soul. Find a peace that safely leads you home. May you find a peace that safely leads you home. To laughter, love, and happiness, and wonders all your own. May you find a peace that safely brings you home. May the wonders of this life shine on you.
I'm so grateful for all of the music that we've shared this morning, from Steve's just your beautiful emotional response to our weekly hymn of affirmation, and the gorgeousness that you bring us into every week, and the availability of this diversity of music that we've got because of this remote multi-platform time. It's just it's such a beautiful gift to add to our time together. I want to say one invitation, but also a request. Because I can't see you in the ways that I used to at least see your little boxes, because we've been having this challenge with the chat, because I miss you, it would be good to hear from you. I would love to know if this sermon series is resonating or feeling overwhelming or both. I would love to know where you are in life and how. Don't be afraid to send me an email. I can't promise that I'll respond quickly, but I promise to read them and carry you and anything that you're holding in my heart. I miss being in our conversation together. That helps me be in this collective conversation with all of us. So on that, I'm wishing you health. I'm wishing you love and peace. This is the day we are given. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Our closing hymn is an invitation to hear again the piece that was introduced last week, again by the Thrive Choir. And as always, you're invited to listen, move, sing along as you learn the words. Carol is going to place the lyrics in the chat.
We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle around to tend these pies. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change of life from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. Turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now. And what a time to be alive in this. Turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these pies. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now. And what a time to be alive in this. Great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning, we shall learn to lead in love.
If you have your chalice lit at home, let's lift them together and say the words found in the chat. We extinguish this chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These remain kindled until we meet again.